welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Files. I am so grateful that you're here. My name is Kim Menninger, and I'm a women's leadership coach. I started this podcast because as a lifelong sufferer of imposter syndrome and a coach who sees this in 98% of the women I meet, I wanted to take this conversation to a bigger stage, so to speak. Imposter syndrome is triggered by a lot of things, but two of the primary triggers are transitions and feeling different from those around us. Women in traditionally male-dominated environments experience these triggers on an almost daily basis, so it's only natural that we would feel this way. What compounds these feelings is the sense that we are alone, the belief that if we share our feelings, we'll expose our incompetence even further. So we carry it around like a deep, dark secret. I started this podcast because I want to put a stop to this nonsense and destigmatize imposter syndrome. Because we don't talk about it, we look around and assume that everyone around us has it all figured out, that we're somehow the exception to the rule, when in reality, we're all feeling this way. And when we can own that and say it out loud, we all benefit, nobody more so than you. So thanks again for being here. If you enjoy it, please share it with others who might also benefit. Welcome, Hira. It is so nice to have you here today. I'm so grateful for this opportunity to have this conversation with you. And I'd love to start by having you introduce yourself.
Thank you so much, Kim. I am really, really pleased to be here today. My name is Hira, as you've already introduced. I am a career coach, a leadership expert, and with a lot of interest and passion for ethnic minority and women leadership. I'm also a licensed NLP practitioner and ICF accredited coach. Oh, okay, I said the coach part. I think I just repeat myself. I'm an author. I published a book last year. I'm a writer. I write lots of articles. I'm also a podcaster. But I haven't podcasted for a long time. I have to resume that. And I am primarily a speaker, I guess. And I'm also the CEO of like four different projects.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're very busy. So I'd love to ask you the question I generally start with, which is, what does imposter syndrome mean to you? And as an extension of that, how, if at all, has it shown up in your life or your work?
So this is such a good question. You know, imposter syndrome is so close to my heart because I literally discovered this when I started my career around 14 years ago, but I didn't know what it was, to be honest. I think when I started working and I was a very young junior manager, I was 21 or 22, I was working in a very male-dominated sort of a department. And I had very senior managers who were twice my age. And I had to, you know, sometimes do trainings for them and I had to do workshops for them. And that's when I used to sometimes feel a little insecure about my knowledge and whether I'm qualified enough to do this. And I would often want to like wear heels or wear my hair in a bun or, you know, wear glasses. I even considered, you know, coloring my hair white so I would look wiser. And, you know, in hindsight, I didn't really know what it was. I mean, well, at that time, I didn't really know what it was. But of course, now when I think about it, because I discovered the word imposter syndrome literally about 5 years ago. And every time, because I've moved in different countries, so I originally started my career in Pakistan. That's when I first identified with this syndrome. And then I moved to Dubai. And again, I was training international participants and my audience moved from local to international. So again, I used to doubt myself, you know, who am I to be here? And then finally, when I moved to London 4 years ago, and I started working and I started being recognized, imposter syndrome would rear its ugly, ugly head again and again.
Yeah, I'm curious, because you have such a strong international background, if you have noticed any difference in how it has shown up for you based on the culture that you're in? Has there been any pattern that you've seen in terms of, is it pretty universal wherever you are, or is it impacted at all by the environment?
Um, think it is pretty universal, but I would say that actually it's a very interesting question, and let me think about it. So I think every time I did experience this, it was because I doubted myself. I wasn't sure if I was qualified enough or good enough to be in the place that I was in. So I think but in Pakistan, I think it was more to do with, you know, whether I'm good enough in terms of my knowledge and experience. And I think it was more in terms of experience because I thought I was very junior and I was very young. But when I moved to countries like, for example, London, I think it was more to do with the fact that I obviously belong to a specific background and race and ethnicity and faith. And I think that sort of played with my self-doubt a bit more than it did when I was in my country, when I was in my own country, if that makes sense. Because I then used to sort of have a stereotype threat come in and that was sort of, and I did later on when I did a research on imposter syndrome and I started writing a lot about imposter syndrome, I realized that for people of color, imposter syndrome is a bit different because they're already aware of the stereotypes associated with their faith or their identity, you know, the background or their race, and that impacts how they experience imposter syndrome.
Absolutely, I'm glad that you mentioned that. And so, I'm curious, as you've gone through your journey, where has this, or can you give us an example? I guess I should say of how this has shown up. And then what have you done about it? Because I know that you've done a lot of research on this. I know, you know, as a coach, I'm sure you see it a lot. Like, what has made this easier for you?
So I think the very first thing was to recognize that it existed. Because before that, I just used to have these weird feelings and I had no idea why I had them. And I thought it was just me or it was lack of confidence. And when I discovered this about 5 years ago, when I discovered what it was, I wouldn't lie, I had this perverse sort of delight in knowing that I'm not alone. And there are lots of people, you know, with me in this together who have exactly the same feelings as I do. And some of them are actually celebrities and successful people, because I think, you know, of course, you would also know that, you know, imposter syndrome is usually people who have had previous experience of success or who have had, you know, visible evidence of success and who are successful. I think they are the ones who suffer from it the most. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it was just recognizing that this is a feeling and it is probably... also recognizing that even though I did have coping strategies to deal with it, I still do. There are times when it just kind of comes in and, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, I can do something about it. I wouldn't say yes, I know I do have coping strategies, but I think what is important to know is, which is, I don't know if it's a sad thing, but it never really goes away, to be honest. I mean, it just sort of comes in every now and then, and I think you just learn to cope with it with sort of different strategies you have up your sleeve, like positive thinking and, you know, flipping your thoughts and things like that.
Yeah, I think you make a couple of really good points there, and I certainly felt the same. Kind of, I love how you said the part about the pleasure of knowing that other people feel this too, right? There was such a sense of relief when I first heard the term and thought, oh, this is a real thing. It's not just me, right? And I repeatedly hear that from people who are introduced to this topic for the first time and feel a similar sense of relief. And then also what you said about it not really ever going away, I think that's really true. And you made a really good point about the fact that it tends to be associated with people who have been successful. And I always talk about the effect on high achievers. And I think that's because those of us who identify as high achievers are always stretching our comfort zones, right? We're always trying new things. And that puts us in vulnerable situations where we are more likely to experience self-doubt. So
absolutely.
I'm curious, you talked about the coping strategies and you threw out a couple of them. Can you share your go-to strategy? And like, if you find this creeping up on you, in your everyday life, like what's the first strategy that you turn to?
So I think the first thing which I did, and in fact, this was something which I knew, but my husband sort of reinforced this. And recently, it was last year, I was publishing a book alongside female role models like Rihanna Huffington and Claire Shipman, all these, you know, amazingly huge celebrities. And that day, I couldn't sleep the whole night. And I was like, you know, what is this happening? And is it me? You know, do I even deserve this? What if people find out that, you know, she's not deserving and she's probably just sort of, you know, winging your way to that term you use when you suffer from self-doubt, that, you know, you're probably flying by the seat of your pants or you just winging your way through it. So those sort of thoughts did enter my mind. And my husband literally made me sit down and he said, well, you know what? I think, you know, just sit down and write down your past achievements and your past accomplishments. And what have you done in the past? And I thought, well, no, that's not necessary. He said, no, it is necessary. Sit down because obviously you must have done something in the past which sort of led you to this particular achievement. And then I sat down and I wouldn't really do that ever, but I did it. And ever since then, what I've done is that whenever I hear a good comment, or some good feedback, I screenshot it. I take a screenshot of that and then I post it on my social media. And I keep referring back to it. I mean, it does sound a bit more like full of yourself, but no, it really, it does help because, you know, in days when you're not up, you know, you feel that you're not up to it or you feel self-doubt or whatever creeping in, then you can always go back to all these nice things people have said about you, all the nice things you've done in the past. So they really help. And then there's this one strategy which I really, really do, and that's called a brain flip. And people really like this. And this is a strategy where whenever I feel a negative thought entering my mind, so, you know, I count to three and I say 1, 2, 3, and literally at three, I flip the thought with a positive thought and I consciously flip the thought and reverse, you know, my thought process and bring in positive thoughts. Because again, you know, negativity is so contagious. If you allow negative thoughts to linger on for too long, then they will just stay and gradually they will like literally spread across, you know, every inch of your body until you're so shaky and unsure. So I do this, I flip the thought. And so for example, if I'm going on the stage to speak with very senior people, so instead of thinking that, oh my God, who am I to be here? I'll say that, oh, I will be amazing and people will love my energy. And I also do what is called positive visualization. So I sort of visualize people clapping for me or saying good things about me. So yeah, I think these are some of my go-to strategies. And I think reframing failure has also really helped. You know, I'm not so bothered anymore about failing or about, you know, people judging me or about, you know, about being vulnerable, because I think that again plays a huge role in imposter syndrome, in coping with imposter syndrome, when you realize that, you know, this is not really failure. It's just a temporary road bump and I'm going to get over it. In fact, I always preach, I say that, you know, failure is really good for you. It's vitamins for you, because if you don't fail, then it's not really good for your immune system and your resilience. You need to fail in order to better in life.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You said so many great things there. And I do think that we are socialized to focus so much more on the negative. And when you talk about writing down the positives, that's a strategy I often recommend too, because I do think that because of our tendency to really zoom into the negative and be thinking about how I'm going to fail and what I don't know, we don't fully capture in our minds all of the great things that we've already done, all of the ways in which we are ready for what we're about to do. And so putting that on paper is a really powerful way to remind ourselves, hey, you know what? I really do know what I'm doing. Right? I really do deserve to be here. And I love what you said too about the feedback piece, because it's so helpful to be able to turn back to that feedback and to know, hey, you know what? I've gotten really good feedback, good input from people in the past. I know I can do it again. So I think just a conscious effort to try to change the thought, like you said, I love that flip that you talked about, right? Of just like noticing that our mind is going to naturally go towards the negative. So how can we get ahead of that and make sure that we are making a conscious effort to reframe that in a more positive way?
Yes, absolutely. And I feel, Kim, that honestly, in this world, if you look at people, I mean, who doesn't fail? Even the people who look very sorted and who look so amazing and brilliant and perfect, I'm sure even they have failed. I think people just sort of project their best life on social media. So we obviously don't know what's happening in the background, right? So Everybody has their own fair share of failures, which they don't share, but of course, they do happen in the background, and they made who, you know, these people who they are. So this is really important. And again, I think imposter syndrome, I would say also, I mean, you know, it is a women specific thing, but it is not just women specific. It's more of a something which impacts marginalized groups or people who, you know, are in a minority any place, or, you know, especially in creative fields. So that's where this imposter syndrome is felt even more. And I think the sad part is that imposter syndrome in turn leads to a lot of other challenges. Like, you know, because you suffer from imposter syndrome, then you have, you suffer from perfectionism, then, you know, there's fear of judgment, there's fear of failure, then you're not stepping up, you're not promoting yourself. And this is what I think is very interesting, that just because it is one thing, there are a series of other internal barriers. But I guess if you're able to tackle this, you know, at its root, then you're able to tackle all the rest of the barriers that come along with it.
Yeah, I think it's really important to acknowledge the ripple effect that happens from this core experience of imposter syndrome. You make a really good point. And I'm curious if we could go back for a moment, because you said something really important too when you talked about people of color and the stereotypes. And I'm curious if you could share more about either your own experience or what you've learned from others about how that shows up, and whether there are things that you think others should know about that we can do to better support people who might find themselves in that situation.
So yes, I think what happens is that, you know, Valerie Young, who's also a reviewer of my book and who's, you know, was sort of number one expert on imposter syndrome. So she identified this, and she said that, you know, for people of color, there are about seven different groups who are more likely to be prone to imposter syndrome as compared to the rest of the people. And one of them, of course, people in minority. And minority people, of course, you know, they are often, you know, they are aware of the stereotypes associated with their racial or ethnic groups. And what happens is that, you know, it's actually called a stereotype threat when people feel at risk of confirming negative stereotypes associated with their social groups. So, for example, you know, my religion, and, you know, if I'm a Muslim, then I would be scared of people thinking about, oh, you know, what is she up to? And, you know, because, you know, my faith is probably globally, there are certain negative stereotypes associated with it. Or if I'm an Asian woman or a brown woman. So there are these stereotypes associated to different marginalized groups. And these people, they unfortunately feel the pressure not just to represent themselves, but their entire social group. And I think that's what makes me, going back to your point when you said how it's different, I think when you are in your own country, it's probably a fear of whether I've experienced enough or not. But when you're in a foreign country, when you're an expat or an immigrant, then I guess you sort of go through that additional pressure and you become more vulnerable to imposter syndrome, because you start feeling that, oh my God, you know, if I do something wrong, then not only will they say that Hira has done something wrong, but it's just like, oh, you know, she's a Pakistani, or she's an Asian, or she's a Muslim. So, like, you know, I'll be representing my entire community. So there's a lot of pressure involved.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's a really important thing. And, you know, I talk with a lot of people who have different cultural backgrounds, you know, different racial backgrounds. And this shows up for everybody a little bit differently, but there are definitely universal themes, which I think you hit on. And I'm curious, because you have that global background that we talked about, and you're now in London, do you think the same strategies that we've already talked about are effective in this context, or are there other things that you would recommend for people who may be feeling the way that you just described?
No, I think absolutely. Also this, but it's also, I tell people of color particularly that, you know, obviously all these strategies help, but also be like, you know, proud of your identity. Do not be scared to be vulnerable. And I often share this, that the reason I think which, you know, if I can say so myself, the reason why I was successful in London was because I never really cared too much about trying to fit in. Of course, I wanted to be accepted. And that's, I think that's like a basic need which every person has. But that didn't mean that I didn't stay true to my values. I am a strong believer in creating awareness, because I feel that unless you don't make people aware of what you represent and what your values are, then people will always be, you know, they'll always be unsure. They will never really know about you, right? So I also say that, you know, apart from all the strategies that I did mention, it's also important to be proud of your identity, to be true to your values, and to make people aware of this, that, you know, this is what I do and this is what I don't do, and these are my boundaries. You don't have to sort of shift yourself just to fit in, because that leads to a lot of, you know, mental health problems, because you are trying to go against against your roots or what you represent. So I think that's important, creating awareness and making people know that this is my comfort zone, and this is what it is, and this is where I like to stay in.
I really like that. I do think you're right that people will make up their own stories in the absence of that information. And so it's not that you should feel the need to explain yourself, but I think there's an opportunity there to share more openly who you are and you know, your values. Like you said, the more we have access to understanding each other, I think the greater the sense of belonging will be for everybody. I think there are a lot of well-intentioned people right now who are walking around in states of anxiety and fear about what to say to other people, right?
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
And so I think we all have an opportunity to share more of ourselves and to invite people into different conversations than we may have had in the past.
Yeah. And I think it's just okay to sort of accept that, you know, you don't always know everything about everyone, right? So you could make mistakes. So just be self-compassionate and forgive yourself. That's really important. I mean, I was doing this kindness webinar today, and some, you know, one of the hosts, she emphasized this, and I was like, yes, this is so important. You know, a lot of times we are so harsh on ourselves. So yeah, I think creating dialogue, creating awareness, all this really helps. And I guess if you are, you know, when you master self-leadership, when you're aware of your own thoughts and feelings, I think that's probably the best way going forward, just to know yourself and to know what your boundaries are, what your values are, and to be able to reflect that to people so that people know exactly what boundaries not to cross, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that you said self-compassion too, because I think that's an important theme for this entire conversation is, you know, we judge ourselves so harshly. And if we do have, as you described it, a temporary road bump, right? If we do, which will inevitably happen because we're humans and nobody's perfect, to not define ourselves by that one moment in time, right? And that goes back to the flipping of the thoughts too, is we have to think about ourselves in context and not get so focused on any one incident in which we feel we performed less than perfectly, and just, you know, give ourselves some grace in the same way that we would the people around us.
That's true. I completely agree. Definitely.
Yeah. So what motivated you to want to tell your story today? What are you hoping people will take away from it?
What motivated me to share my story? I think because I'm sort of a person who has traveled from place to place, and, you know, who had to relocate her business, you know, three times, because I had to build my leadership brand first in Pakistan, then UAE, and then in UK, and now post-COVID, I might have to sort of reinvent my business for a fourth time. So I guess it's important to know that when you are going through so many changes and when you are meeting with so many different people and, you know, exposing yourself to new cultures and new countries, it is challenging. So if you do not have these coping strategies, which you can use and which you can sort of go back to, but I guess that would be very difficult. So I think I just sort of want to share people that, you know, for, you know, coming from a person who has reinvented and built her business from scratch so many times, if, you know, and going through stressful situations every time, because obviously you must be aware how hard it is to sort of build your business from scratch. So I think if I can do it, then so can you. I mean, so can the rest of the people, really.
Thank you so much. I mean, you've brought a really powerful perspective to this conversation. I'm really grateful that we had a chance to talk today, and I know that others will find a lot of value in this as well.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure being here, Kim. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening today. If you're struggling with imposter syndrome and you'd like additional support, check out the show notes for more resources or contact me directly. I would love to help you. And if you'd like to tell your story, I would love to interview you. You will find my contact info in the show notes, so reach out anytime. Thanks again.